I realise I never actually quite finished the talk, but I think I probably said enough. And so if there are any questions or comments, if anyone would like to say something, this will be a good time. Or if there's anything that anyone would like me to say a bit more about or explain more clearly. Can people hear all right?
Cause,
no. So you need to speak louder.
And he came back into the kitchen and he had a pair of shorts on, along his leg of his bike. And for many years, ever since I was a child, I've been absolutely petrified of the bike. And he brushed it off. And my immediate reaction was to pick up a towel and pick up the spider and put it outside, which is something I could never have done before. I would have just been stood there, paralytic, not even able to speak. But then after a few moments, I thought, what if I hurt that spider? And I went out to try and see if I could find it, to see if it was, I hurt its leg for my decision. And I couldn't find it, so it must have gone away.
It's interesting how over time one does change. I mean, and you often don't realize how much you've changed until you meet people that you knew before, you know, who maybe still have the same attitudes. You know, if there are mosquitoes, you spray them with spray. And get rid of them, get rid of the pests. And, you know, I find for myself it's unthinkable, it's shocking. I mean, it's not that I like mosquitoes particularly, I certainly don't like being bitten by them, but I would never dream of, you know, using some kind of substance to kill them off or anything. And, you know, any times that one does have to kill a creature, it's always, you know, you never do it without really, really considering all the other options, the alternatives. It's something you do very much as a last resort. Like we had some rats in the roof of one of the buildings chewing away at the electrics, and you know, it was getting quite dangerous actually. And so we asked them to leave. We did a load of chanting and spoke to them very seriously. And said if they didn't leave by the next day, then unfortunately, you know, something very terrible was going to happen to them. And unfortunately, they didn't leave. So, but we did what we could to try to encourage them to. So, did you? Oh. Well, we were just concerned that they were going to cause a fire in the building where our guests were living, which would have been a wee bit unfortunate. Yes. Yes.
I'd like to talk about that because I have found that being honest sometimes moves me on and the other person on, even if it's very explosive. And then wonder after if I've said too much.
It's a difficult one. And I mean, I think what I find is helpful in regard to all of this actually is to see it as like a lifetime's training. So it's not something you're going to make mistakes. but each time that one makes a mistake, then one learns a little bit more. And, you know, having myself, you know, tried being nice all the time, you know, and seen the result of that, which is, you know, if you're upset, people pick up on it. You know, particularly people who meditate, like in this community, people know what you're thinking long before even you know sometimes. Because, you know, we're just very tuned into each other. So if you've got some kind of grudge or difficulty with somebody, you know, they'll know even if you don't say anything. And so if you're smiling and saying nice things but feeling something not so nice, that doesn't really work. And so, as I said, I've got quite interested in finding ways of communicating clearly that are helpful, even if they're not always particularly beautiful. And the Buddha gives a very, very good teaching about this, quite explicit in one of the suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya, where he talks about the kinds of speech that at a Tathagata, like a fully enlightened one, would or would not utter. And he says, if speech is true, helpful, beneficial, and pleasant, he'd utter it, knowing the right time. If it's true, if it's going to be beneficial, even if it's not pleasant, he will still utter it, but he'll know choosing the right time. So that's the key thing. So you don't just blurt it out, you know, when you feel like it. You try to find a suitable time. Even if it's, you know, something that's not very nice, you can still... It's not that you have to sit on it or not say anything, but if you feel it's going to be helpful, and if it's the truth, then you can say it. But the way that, I mean, I often find a good way of gauging it is just noticing the result. You know, if you do something and the other person is miserable or confused and you feel miserable and confused, then the chances are that you didn't quite find the right time or the right way of presenting it. So then you can review. I mean, we talk about living in the present, but it doesn't mean that we can't actually learn from what's happened in the past. So if you know, if something happens that doesn't feel quite right, then you think, well, what, you know, where did I go wrong there? You know, what could I have done differently? We've all got very much into something called non-violent communication. I don't know if any of you have heard of this, which is a particular technique of communicating where you are actually very honest, very clear, very direct, but the difference between that and ordinary, the way that people in ordinary relate, is that there's no intention to harm. You know, it's like, and in fact, it's a very freeing way. So you stay in touch with your own, you know, what you see, your own kind of response, how you feel about a situation, and you know, what your needs are, and then you make a request. Just very, very simple stages, and. I see that as something that has tremendous potential, because we can get ourselves into such a tangle. So I'm interested in your question. It's a very good question. I think it's one that's there for everybody, yeah. In different to different degrees.
And the ego as well. It's difficult to keep a rein on that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, yes.
I know I react quite easily.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And have you noticed how when you follow that, it escalates?
Yeah.
I had a very interesting thing once. It was one of the nuns, actually. She kind of said something, and I could feel myself reacting, so I said something back, and then she said something back, and it was kind of, we were getting hotter and hotter, and I just thought, what's happening here? So I don't really care about this. And it was my ego. You know, it was like a kind of ego battle. And it just takes one person to kind of disarm. Like, as soon as I kind of breathed out and thought, this just doesn't really matter. The whole thing just settled. But as long as my ego is engaged and I followed that, then it just got, you know, quite hotter and hotter. Like those monks in the time of the Buddha. I mean, the whole community was involved. Everybody was involved over something very, very trivial, very small. That's right. Yes. Well, It depends. I mean, it depends what the situation is, doesn't it, really? I mean, it may be that you can just avoid the person, you know, just not talk to them, not have anything to do with them, stay out of the way. It may be that you put up with a difficulty, you know, you just find some way to deal with it. And often just actually formulating it is helpful. You know, we tend to react when we're caught off guard. You know, somebody does something and we react. Whereas if you know that that person's going to do it, you know that that person's going to do that really annoying thing that always gets you upset. So you're prepared. You say, okay, she's going to do it, or she's going to say it, or this is going to happen. Okay. Okay, so it's happening now. How do I feel? I feel myself getting tense. I feel I want to say something. But no, I'll just relax. It's okay. There'll be a time when we can talk about it. So once you've actually determined to kind of watch out for a time when you can talk about it, then that immediately takes the pressure off. And you can put up with all kinds of things when there's mindfulness. It's when we're not mindful, when we just react. You know, somebody, you know, steps on our toe and we react. That's when we get into trouble. But just having acknowledged that you get upset by this and decided that you're going to find a time to talk about it, you know, it's like you can just cross something off your list.
Can you say that I understand exactly what you're saying?
Good thing to do is just to write things down. Like if you have an exercise book and just write it all down. I find myself sometimes that can be really helpful just in sort of processing stuff. Go and be with nature. Be among trees, take yourself for a walk. Really take care of yourself can be helpful. You know, why does resentment build up? It's because we don't give ourselves enough space. We don't look after our own heart. It's because we're waiting for somebody else to look after us rather than actually taking the time to look after ourselves. So that can be helpful. You may need to say something at the wrong time and make a complete mess. Yeah. And if you do that, do it mindfully. You know, say, okay, this is horrible. This is a mess. I don't want it to be a mess. It's a mess. And again, just stay in touch. You know, keep breathing. Keep with your belly. Keep with your heart. Keep with your breath. Keep relaxing. So it's like while you're doing it, there's a focus of kindness towards your own being. You know, there's a kind of feeling of an attunement with the suffering, with the difficulties, a compassion for this being here. And I suspect that you'll find it'll come right in due course. But yeah, sometimes it seems that there isn't the right time. Sometimes you wait for years. I waited for years and years and years to mention something to somebody one time. It was very sweet. It wasn't a big thing. But it was quite nice. And then when it got mentioned, they could hear it very clearly. And, you know. But I'm particularly slow about these things sometimes. So. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I really didn't want to put down do-gooders and do-gooding. And I would strongly encourage, and one of the things that gladdens me most about my particular vocation is the fact that people come here on retreat, they come to the monastery, and they take what they learn, they take their practice, they take their peace into their profession in the world. So, I mean, we have doctors, we have social workers, we have teachers, we have therapists, we have builders, we have policemen, we have all kinds of people from the helping professions and who do very, very good things in the society. And that really, really, really gladdens me that they take the Dhamma into what they're doing. But what I was getting at was the do-gooding just for its own sake at the expense of the do-gooder. And it's not that they should stop doing good, but that they make sure that they actually establish some kind of contact with themselves. Because what happens, what I've noticed in my own life, because I speak from experience. I mean, having spent years living my monastic life, doing good. I mean, I was worked very hard. I've been a very dutiful nun for more than 20 years. I've been so good. And for quite a number of years, I was very, very good, and I was pleased I was doing this, but I wasn't happy. You know, there wasn't a real sense of joyfulness and delight in my life. I didn't want to do anything else, but there was a kind of a dried up, sort of dutiful, slightly glum, sad feeling. And then I got really ill, and I thought, well, you know, what's really important in life? And I thought the most important thing in life is to enjoy it, is to live it and to enjoy it. And so I'm jolly well going to enjoy my life. And if it means taking a bit more time for myself, going on retreat, resting when I need to rest, if it means actually taking time to celebrate the good things that I've done, then I'm going to do that. Just as a way of looking after myself. So that the good, it's not that you stop doing good, but it comes from a very different place. And people feel that. So it's to do good and to really enjoy yourself the benefits of doing good. So you're not just doing it because it's the right thing to do and because, you know, you hope that people are going to notice and appreciate it. And I'm not saying that's the case with you, but it can happen. And even not in a very gross way, but in little subtle ways. So to make sure you appreciate your goodness, you know, even if nobody else appreciates it, at least you appreciate. So that's really what I was getting at. I don't know if that makes sense. Is helpful.
I'm a Sufi, and I follow the teachings of Tajra Vinayat Khan. And there's a lovely book called The Bowl of Saki, where he writes down a terribly important. Perhaps you would like to say something about that.
I mean, I use the breath all the time, but we all do, don't we? But the awareness of the breath is like my main meditation, is my main meditation object, and it's certainly one that I would strongly recommend and encourage. So whether one's doing formal meditation or whether, as I spoke about, just sitting quietly with oneself, certainly to use the breath as the anchor in the present. I mean, the breath is something that's happening here, happening now, that when the mind is going off into all kinds of other things, either obsessive thinking of some time, doubt, remorse, regret, even excitement, you know, even wonderful thoughts, just to be able to link in with the breath is a tremendous refuge. Like we would call it, like the refuge in Dhamma. It's like linking in with the present moment. Also using the breath as a way of calming. So when people talking about, like, if they're feeling very upset about something or very angry or confused, then just like focusing very much on the out breath as a way just to really relax and soothe the whole system. So I would certainly put a great emphasis on the use of the breath. Not specifically. We have what we call the mindfulness of breathing meditation practice, which is really just an awareness of the in and out breathing, you know, just the normal breath. And as one practices that in meditation, it can be, as the mind calms down, is that the breath can become very subtle, very refined. But within this particular tradition, we don't particularly emphasize altering the breath in any way. It's much more just the normal, the natural breathing that we attune to.
Can I put
Not that I've come across within this particular tradition. And there are different schools of meditation techniques where there is more emphasis on working with the breath in particular ways. People within the monastic community, they practice other forms of body work, like do yoga, qigong, tai chi, different forms of physical work. The chanting itself is a working with the breath. I've just been during my retreat in the tipi, sort of beginning to do like practicing with mantra chanting, and just contemplating different energies, vibrations in the body. These are all things that we can work with, but it's not particular to the way that the Buddha spoke about the breathing meditation. He just spoke about it much more as a sort of natural process that just naturally carried you through different states of consciousness. Yes. Well, first of all, just undertaking, choosing to live within a particular precept structure. So for the monks and nuns, the ordained community, there are particular precept structures that we choose to live within. And then in a lay situation, there's the five precepts, or some people, you know, like to adapt those in some way. And I suppose what I was talking about was just an encouragement. I think sometimes we can be rather shy about talking about our religious life. You know, it's like something that you can talk about with monks and nuns, or you can talk about, you know, in special situations. But to be able to talk, you know, to see, like, the people who come to the monastery, it's like a community in its own right, you know, that there's a tremendous amount among people who practice that they can share with one another, just through discussing, through working in different ways, say with the precepts. And it's perhaps a little bit early days, and perhaps there's a kind of slightly self-conscious feeling about it, but I'm quite interested in encouraging people to just develop a bit more confidence in their own practice. You know, like for yourself, you've been practicing for, you know, a great many years, and, you know, must have developed all kinds of skillful means, probably without even realizing it, you know, ways of dealing with difficult situations at work or with your family or whatever, that, you know, other people could benefit from hearing about. But maybe we need to kind of create situations within which that can happen, just to sort of make it more normal. That's the kind of thing, yes. And just to acknowledge that we're all, you know, that there's a kind of, like a sense of sangha, a sense of community. Because I think, well, I imagine, and one of the things that I sense, particularly say if people come for 10 days and we practice together and we, a very, very supportive situation, being on retreat, and I always feel a kind of concern when people have to leave the monastery, because it seems that in some senses they're going into a very lonely world where many people think that what goes on in the monastery is utterly weird. You know, and if you try and talk about it with you know, people say you work with, you know, they'd think you were just really strange. And so to kind of maximize the benefit of the fact that, you know, you do come, you do practice, and there are, you know, lots and lots of people here who are doing this in their own situation, in their own way. And like many of the kind of situations that you encounter in your daily life, I wouldn't actually know very much about. I mean, I could give a general response to particular things that you might encounter, but there might be somebody else who's much more tuned in to, you know, what it feels like to be in this particular situation and have found ways of working with it. So As I said, it's bound to feel a wee bit self-conscious and strange at first, but you may find that it just kind of begins to happen more naturally. So I think that's what I'm talking about. That we're not the only ones who've got sort of things to say, that, you know, the people round about you have all been practicing, they all have experiences, and that you yourself probably have a tremendous amount to offer. Yeah. Well, maybe just to kind of keep it very, very simple. I mean, this is just a suggestion, and I think, you know, you'll probably come up with something yourself. But I mean, what comes to mind is the possibility of, say, like, you know, from one moon day, say, one from the full moon to the new moon, say, a period of a fortnight, you contemplate, say, the first precept, and you just, in your daily life, you know, pay particular attention to this precept in how you observe it, and just opportunities where there might be ways that it just kind of comes up quite naturally in conversation. You know, not actually kind of making anything artificial about it, but just noticing, oh yes, and the first precept, or oh yes, harmlessness, or oh yes. Or you might hear somebody else say something about, I don't know, something to do with harmlessness, or something, somebody saying something that's actually about causing harm. You think, oh, that's against the precept. Is there some way that I can, you know, introduce a different way of looking at this? And sometimes if you're actually carrying something in your mind as a kind of practice, you know, just each day you think, oh yes, I'm contemplating the first precept this, you know, for this fortnight, then automatically you find situations just arising where it comes up. And then you could do the second precept and the third precept and so on. Just a suggestion. Because you're right, it is rather a private thing. But one of the things I've found, like living in monastic communities, gradually the things that sort of previously were... I mean, I used to be really embarrassed meditating in public. You know, I didn't like to meditate in front of anybody else. But gradually, you know, there's a kind of relaxation that happens, and you realize, well, actually, it's quite helpful to people to see you meditating. It's quite helpful to people to hear you talking about how you work with the precepts, or, you know, how you structure your day, or how you deal with particular situations, or what you feel about the chanting, or the monastery, or whatever. It can actually be quite... supportive and encouraging. So, just some suggestions. That's very helpful, Rajit. And I couldn't say anything very definite. My perception of things is based on fairly limited, as I said, input. And it seems more complex. It seems that the more complex issues coming up, moral issues and so on. There certainly seems to be an awful lot more people, and more people happening. And then, I mean, maybe it's just that the newspapers tend to present a rather gloomy view of things. I don't know, but one of the things I find most encouraging is the fact that it's always been humanity's always been pretty confused, and human beings have always been doing terrible things to each other, and the likelihood is that they'll continue to do terrible things to each other. And I find that's helpful as an antidote to the idea that, well, maybe one day we're going to make it all right. Because when I felt like that, you know, when I was always living my life in order to kind of make things better in the future, in order to kind of bring about some kind of future result, there was always a kind of slight weariness, a slight sense of strain there. Whereas just acknowledging that really it's in process. And I think you're quite right. I don't think you can really say whether it's getting any better or any worse. It certainly doesn't look very good. And people don't seem to be much better at solving the difficulties. But there's certainly a lot of work going on into kind of helping, like this non-violent communication. I mean, people are interested in mediation, that kind of thing. So, you know, it may be that there's a kind of evolution happening. But I think you're right, just to see it in terms of like a process. And rather than moving towards some ultimate goal, just to see it's kind of moving on to the next stage. It's just a continuing evolution from the beginning of time, indefinitely. And maybe it will all end with the next generation. We don't know. maybe it won't. Certainly, I mean, I think it's clear that the ecological issues are fairly significant in relation to the planet. I mean, the little bits that I've read about that seem to be rather cause for concern. But at least to contemplate what one can work on, what one can solve, and understanding one's own heart. And directly or indirectly to share that understanding with others. Yeah, that's certainly true. Yeah, we get to hear all kinds of things, don't we? See them on TV. And live, yes. Yes. I was interested, I find it very helpful, like the first few years, we never, you know, we weren't encouraged particularly to read newspapers and or to kind of know very much about what was going on out there. And I realize it's because it's actually very difficult to respond particularly skillfully, because the mind so easily goes into worry. You know, like when, you know, as you were saying, like, I think things are probably just as the same as they've always been, but now that we know about them, there's a kind of sense of being connected with them and a sense of responsibility. And so it raises the question of, well, what is our responsibility? You know, is our responsibility to make everything all right? You know, is it? What, you know, and where can we actually make things all right? It came to me quite strongly quite a number of years ago when I was visiting my family, watching the news on television, and just this incredible feeling of anxiety and concern and a sort of feeling of feeling responsible and wondering what I could do about whatever it was. And realizing that wasn't actually a particularly helpful state. Just worrying about it or feeling depressed about it. And seeing, well, I can do something about the greed, hatred and delusion in here. I can do something about the suffering in here. That's something I can help. The other thing that I talk about sometimes is just like the whole idea of like sharing our practice and metta bhavana, like just developing a heart of kindliness and compassion, which is like the Buddhist form of prayer, really. So that's something that one can do. But if it's just kind of worry, then that doesn't bring such a good result. But sometimes, like if you meet somebody who's truly peaceful, then somehow everything's all right around them. I don't know if you've noticed this. So what one can do is to make oneself into a truly peaceful person. Or at least understand the causes of unpeacefulness. I'll be here for a while if anyone wants to come and ask me things privately or more privately. But otherwise, I wish you well and success in your practice. May you all realize Nibbana in this very lifetime.